Hello and welcome to Wild Business Report on the BBC World Service. I'm Will Bain. Great to have your company on the programme today. Coming up, we'll be hearing from the farming sector in the United States in just a moment to gauge what impact Monday's tariffs imposed by China on products ranging from pork and corn to soybeans and beef might have. And we'll also be hearing, too, what the escalating trade war between the world's two largest economies could mean for prices for Chinese consumers as a result. Also today, we'll hear about Canada's new leader and find out whether his background as a central bank governor, both at home and abroad, might help him as he gets set to deal with his frontier in that particular trade conflict. And first Ukraine, now the Democratic Republic of Congo looks set to try and use its mineral wealth to attract US financial and perhaps military support.
If they give maybe the minerals to the US government and then in return the government of US, we also provide military support.
And a boom for this street food in India.
It's not healthy. It's a guilty pleasure for me. I like it. I try to control it.
Yeah, all that to come. Let's start, though, as we often have in the past couple of weeks, talking tariffs, because Chinese tariffs on many US farm products came into force on Monday as the trade war between the world's two largest economies ramped up. Beijing will enforce 15% import taxes on US products like chicken, wheat and corn, as well as 10% on things including soybeans, pork, beef and fruit. We'll look at the potential impact on US producers with two joining us live in just a moment. But first, Han Lin, China country head at the consultancy The Asia Group in Shanghai, told Sean Farrington what impact he thought the new tariffs might have on Chinese consumers.
The challenge right now is not inflation prospects, it's actually Chinese deflation, particularly with prices going down. Now, that may not be a bad thing because the key driver for deflation is that Chinese food prices are going down. And so in many ways, when the announcement of tariffs on U.S. agricultural goods was announced, it probably doesn't have that big of an impact on the normal everyday Chinese.
So if it doesn't have that big an impact on China right now, are you expecting America to retaliate to the retaliations and keep going stronger with various parts of the trade war until there is an impact on China?
I think it's quite possible. I think a key goal is that ultimately Trump and Xi do want to meet each other. But certainly before any discussion or negotiation of some grand trade deal, you need to enter it from a position of strength, right? And so you're seeing a lot of tit for tat between both sides to demonstrate that neither side will back off easily.
Han Lin in Shanghai there. So what about US producers and exporters? Well, among the 700 plus products earmarked by the Chinese for those additional tariffs, some are meat products like boneless beef and swine and offal. So good that we're going to be joined by Joe Sheely. Joe's the Senior Vice President of Communications at the US Meat Exporter Federation. And we're also joined by Michelle Klieger. Michelle is the President and Founder of the consultancy Stratagem, works with clients right across the agricultural sector, and she's joining us live from the US state of Massachusetts. Welcome both to World Business Report. Michelle, first of all, do the broad picture for us here. I guess everybody knew across the agricultural sector in the United States that some kind of response was coming. Does that mean they've been braced for impact, or is this still going to come as a bit of a shock for people?
Well, thank you for having me. I think that, you know, everybody has been watching it. It is of key concern. But there's really only so much planning you can do in uncertainty, especially when we're now entering planting season and seeds and inputs and other things have been purchased already. So I think there's a lot of eyes on what's going on in trade right now, but still a lot of uncertainty that is in the market.
Joe, is that the feeling among members? Here we go again.
Yes, the additional duties on U.S. pork and beef are certainly a concern, but not particularly surprising. For U.S. pork, China is our top destination for offal products, organ meat, feet, ears, that kind of thing. And it's difficult to remain competitive when you're already facing retaliatory duties. We already face a retaliatory duty on pork. And so this ups the effective duty to 47%. And then on the beef side, our primary competitor on the higher end of the beef market in China is the Australian grain-fed beef. And that product enters China duty-free under a free trade agreement. And so with the additional 10%, we're actually facing a 22% tariff disadvantage versus our primary competitor.
And in terms of impact, what did you learn from the first time round then about what those differentials could have, might have, did have, Joe. Did you see your customers, your clients sell less into China, sell none at all? What was the kind of impact, and what might you expect this time as a result, I guess?
On the pork side, it's been a little bit difficult to judge the tariff impact on volumes, because China's imports of pork always depend on where they are in their own production cycle. China has just a massive pork industry. They produce and consume about half of the world's pork. And so the volumes that we're moving to China on the pork side are always going to depend primarily on what's happening with their domestic production. As far as beef, we really gained meaningful access to the Chinese market under the first Trump administration, under the Phase One trade agreement. And so that process had been working fairly well. We actually reached $2 billion in exports to China in 2022. Demand has been down a little bit from that, but still very strong market. Mm-hmm. And so, but our primary concern right now, in addition to the tariffs, is we're facing an upcoming deadline for our plants, our U.S. plants, pork producers of pork and beef, to have their eligibility renewed by China. And so that's actually an even more pressing concern for us.
And presumably
us
that becomes political now as well,
right? The additional tariffs.
Presumably the concern would be that becomes political too.
Well, we are concerned about that. We don't have any evidence that the reason that those registrations have not been renewed or the trade tensions, but that's certainly a concern that it may become entangled in this.
Michelle, heard about pork in particular there from Joe, and some of those specific types of meat products that his clients are exporting, his members are exporting. The whole point in these kind of sort of tit-for-tat tariffs, aren't they, that they've got pinch points, ideally kind of geographic ones that they think might hurt President Trump and the administration politically. Are there parts of the US where you look now, bits of the country, sectors in bits of the country, where you think that is going to be painful potentially?
Whenever we're talking about China and trade, it does go back to soybeans, and soybeans accounted for roughly half of U.S. exports to China. So there's definitely a lot of focus on soybeans, especially with that new tariff. And so you're seeing now that with a tariff on that, you know, there's concerns of what impact that will have on the industry. However, it's coming at a time where it is less likely to have as big of an impact. So right now, we are planting soybeans in the United States. They are harvesting them in South America. So Brazil is the largest exporter of soybeans in the world, and they have extremely large production this year. Argentina has also increased their output this year. So from now until September, most of those soybeans are going to be coming from Brazil and Argentina. And so you would expect lower exports from the United States right now. And it's really when you get to the end of summer to see how this situation evolves as to the impact it's going to have on U.S. producers.
And Michelle, just briefly round us out as well then. I started by asking Joe about, was anything learned this time? Do you think farmers in America are better prepared for trade war 2.0?
Yes, I do. I think that we saw a couple of things. We saw how global trade still happens, right? So the U.S. exports to China lowered for a period of time, and then they rebounded, and now they're down again. But exports to other places have changed. Also, the huge driver of demand for U.S. soybeans right now is sustainable aviation fuel and renewable diesel. And so those are markets that could take up more of the soybeans that are more established than they were 6 years ago.
Michelle, thanks so much for your insight today, and Joe as well. Michelle Klieger there, president and founder of the consultancy, the agricultural consultancy Stratagem, and Joe Shuley, the senior vice president of communications at the U.S. Meat Exporters Federation. Well, let's take a look at what the latest ratcheting up of the tariff war is, impact it's having on financial markets. And to do that, Rachel Winter is with us, partner investment manager at Killick & Co here in London. Rachel, welcome back to World Business Report. How much of this can be attributed, what's going on stock markets today? Stock markets around the world down. How much of it is attributable to trade war? How much of it is domestic concerns about domestic economies, do you think?
I think a lot of it this week is about the trade war. I think people are just a bit nervy about what's happening because the rules around the tariffs just keep changing. We've had tariffs being threatened and then rolled back and then reimposed and then changed. And I think markets just don't know what to make of that. And then furthermore, the more tariffs we have, the higher inflation is likely to be. That will mean that interest rates will have to go up to keep that inflation under control. And that's bad news for markets. So I think that's why markets are down this afternoon.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit more detail in just a moment, because Canada has a new prime minister. Tariffs, of course, top of the intray as those pretty turbulent economic times. Well, maybe the most turbulent they've ever faced in the country.
In first place, the next prime minister of Canada, Mark Carney, with 131,674 votes.
When we come together, we build things that last, because we are Canada strong. Vive la Canada. Merci tout le monde.
Mark Carney there, former central bank governor both in Canada and here in the UK, won the race to succeed Justin Trudeau as the leader of the country's governing Liberal Party and as such, for now, the Prime Minister as well. Thanking his supporters, Mr. Carney promised action on issues like the housing crisis in Canada, but he knew what was most immediate on his to-do list.
There's someone who's trying to weaken our economy. Yeah, Donald Trump. Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, as we know, has put unjustified tariffs on what we build, on what we sell, on how we make a living. He's attacking Canadian families, workers, and businesses, and we cannot let him succeed. And we won't. We won't.
Well, speaking to NewsHour on the World Service, the Liberal Party MP, Cody Blois, said Mark Carney's speech reflected the political mood in the country and that Mr. Carney had the experience to meet those challenges posed by President Trump.
Canadians are upset. We are frustrated. We have been concerned with what we're seeing from Mr. Trump and his administration, particularly in the economic and even sovereignty types of threats towards Canada. So I thought Mark did a very good job reflecting the mood of the country last night. And he highlighted what has to be the focus. We cannot control Donald Trump, but we can control what we do in our own country. Mark has great economic and fiscal credentials. He wants to position the Canadian economy to be the best in the G7. Focus on competitive issues in our country, how we build up our supply chains, how we look for other trading partners. Canada has what the world needs in natural resources, agricultural products, steel. You know, we have what the world needs.
Well, as I mentioned, Mr. Carney was the head of the UK's central bank, the Bank of England, as governor between 2013 and 2020. And speaking to the BBC a little bit earlier on, Mohamed Al-Erian, chief economic advisor at the big insurance firm Allianz, who worked alongside Mr. Carney in his time at the Bank of England, says he has an impressive resume.
If you look at his career, it's been from one amazing job to another. You know, Harvard and Oxford educated, Goldman Sachs, Bank of Canada, Bank of England, UN envoy. So he has been preparing for this, but not in the political sense, but in the technocratic sense. In terms of how he will do, I think he's exactly what Canada needs right now. He's a crisis manager. You saw this during Brexit here. You saw this in 2008 in Canada when he was governor of the Bank of Canada. He is a very good crisis manager. And he also is very good at thinking of what comes after the crisis, the day after, as they call it.
That's the economist Mohamed Al-Erian speaking to the BBC a little bit earlier on today. Rachel Winter from Killick & Co. still with us. Rachel, Mohamed Al-Erian listing just a couple of those crises. He's certainly known plenty of financial storms before, hasn't he? The financial crisis of 2008, COVID pandemic, the changes here in the UK that Brexit threw up. I guess in that sense, a man who knows what a kind of economic challenge looks like in terms of what this trade war might throw up.
Exactly. He's got a huge amount of experience. And speaking from my personal point of view here in the UK, I think he was very well received when he was the governor of the Bank of England here. He was here for 7 years. And I think the general consensus is he did a really good job of steering the country through a very difficult time. In particular, he was very good at communicating with the market. So he was very good at explaining exactly what he was doing. And I believe it was him that encouraged the bank to publish its minutes while they were making announcements about changes to interest rates. So overall, I think he's a very good, very experienced individual.
That's really interesting. So it was that kind of clarity, because I've seen that written up a few times in the financial papers this morning here in the UK, pretty much echoing what you were saying really there, Rachel, that he was kind of the man for a crisis because of what? That calmness and that clarity?
Exactly. He was very sensible. He was very clear and he was very good at explaining what he was doing. We often say that markets don't like surprises, but I think with him, because he was so good at forewarning the market and explaining things, I think there were less surprises as a result of that. And it really helped to keep the seas calm.
And I suppose that's almost precisely really what he's faced with here, isn't it? I mean, we've started the program talking about tit-for-tat sanctions. We've got a tariff, we've got more coming down the track in April that are on pause, aren't they? Specifically aimed for Canada. I guess it's being clear with your own businesses in your country and investors who invest into your country about what you are planning to do as a country, as a government, in response to some of that. As long as you're clear, perhaps that shock, you know, what mitigated is probably the wrong word, isn't it? But it can at least be sort of planned for.
It can, exactly. And I do think the situation in Canada now is quite difficult. And I think you want someone in power who's got a really, really good understanding of economics so that they can negotiate from a position of strength.
In terms of that volatility, to bring it back round again to what you were talking about just before we got into that sequence of hearing from Mr. Carney, Rachel, why do you think it is so volatile in such specific sectors? Gideon, who's producing our programme today, asked a good question about why in particular those tech stocks are falling so much today. I'm looking up above my head at the Bloomberg screens, you know, Apple down just shy of 5%, Nvidia, the chip maker, down sharply again. Is that because they think that that might be the next frontier in this tariff war, that they'll move from agriculture to technology?
That could be a part of it, but a lot of it is to do with interest rates. So when interest rates are rising or expected to rise, investors tend to want to reduce the amount of risk that they're taking. So they tend to sell the stocks that they view as being relatively risky, and that tends to be the technology stocks. So you tend to find that when interest rates are rising, for example, as they did in 2022, that's when the riskier sectors like technology will perform the worst.
And I guess then the market needs to take the kind of Mark Carney approach, perhaps be a little calmer in its reactions to what is going to be kind of daily headlines. Yeah, absolutely. Rachel, thanks so much as always for your time there. Rachel Winter, the investment manager and partner at Killick & Co. here in London, looking through those financial markets. You're with World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Well, let's return to what's been a bit of a theme for us today here on the programme, and the issue of food prices, although this time, for now at least, as we're going to hear, it's a pretty domestic issue. No less pressing, though, for Japanese households trying to buy rice, because the spiralling price of the kitchen staple has caused the government in Tokyo to take an unusual and pretty rare step. It's going to release rice reserves the government itself holds for emergencies to try and bring the price back under control. Yukane Inoue, staff writer at the Japan Times, took up the story for us in Tokyo.
Ever since 1995, the Japanese government has a system in place where every year they would stockpile around 200,000 tons of rice each year in order to prepare for an emergency situation where, for some reason, not enough rice is on the market. So they would have some type of a backup to feed the population, basically. And this all started because of the severely poor harvest that happened in 93. But since then, it has mainly been used under circumstances of very serious natural disasters. So the major ones were the earthquake in 2011 and another earthquake in 2016. But this move by the government today was quite significant because it was the first time that the government has auctioned off the stockpile for reasons to bring down the rice prices,
right,
which has been historically high.
So just talk us through that. Why is the price so high in Japan at the moment?
The rice price began to increase to a notable degree around last summer, so around August of 2024. And this was because a combination of reasons, including, you know, not a very drastic, but a little bit of a poor harvest. But it wasn't significant enough that it was going to have a huge impact on it. And people thought that the price would come back to normal once the new harvest of rice began, which usually starts around fall. And something to know here is rice is an annual harvest. So it's only made once a year and it always comes out at the same time. So people thought the price would come back around that time. However, the price of rice never returned to normal. And according to the experts I've talked to, they think this is because a lot of distributors who aren't usually used to dealing with rice enter the market in order to capitalize on the scarcity of rice. So there's a little bit of saturation in the market right now.
So I guess the key thing is here, or maybe there's two key things here now, then, Yukana. One is, how quickly does this government rice kind of end up on shelves? Two, is this a one-off, or are they planning to release more in kind of batches?
So the government announced this plan last month in February, and today was the day where they first started their first batch of auction. And in the announcement that the government made last month, they announced that they would be releasing 210,000 tons of rice. And the auction that happened today was the first round, which included 150,000 tons. So we assume that there's going to be a second batch of the auction happening sometimes at a later date. According to the Agricultural Ministry, they think that since today was the day that the distributors auctioned off the price, they think at the earliest it might start hitting the shelves later this month, so late March or beginning of April, and they assume that the stock would kind of roll out on shelves like either after end of March to beginning of April.
Our thanks to Yukana Inoue, their staff writer at the Japan Times, who had written up that story for them there. Let us know if you're listening in Tokyo or around Japan. What are you seeing in terms of the price of rice? You can get in touch with us on our WhatsApp, +44 330 678 3033. So that's +44 for the UK, 330 678 3033. And I'm sure Ryle Tandon and the team on the late edition of World Business Report and on Business Matters later on tonight, our time, would be really interested to hear your thoughts and see what you're seeing out there. So rice, farm products in the US, now noodles, instant noodles to be more precise, on our foodie themed World Business Report, because India is the third largest consumer after China and Indonesia of instant noodles, and this seemingly simple snack has exploded in popularity, especially among the country's younger population. But as that demand rises, the market is facing pressure from multiple directions: health concerns, changing consumer tastes, and price inflation once again. Tavina Gupta has been taking a look.
It's almost evening and I'm at a popular instant noodle shop in Delhi, which is packed with young people. There's a smell of fried oil in the air. The menu here has a variety of ingredients like cheese, chili, pepper and much more. Now each plate costs less than $1 and the service is quick. So let's speak to some of the customers here.
So I'm here with a group of young students.
So what attracts you to instant noodles?
I think the taste, it's not healthy. It's a guilty pleasure for me. I like it.
And say in a week, how many times do you have instant noodles?
Not in weeks. It's like more of a once or twice a month thing for me. Once a fortnight.
So you control it?
Yeah, I try to control it.
Yeah. Okay, what about you?
Spicy.
Full on spicy.
So this entire group wants to have spicy instant noodles. Do you think instant noodle is healthy?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not. So we prefer taste over healthiness.
India's instant noodles market is growing at a rapid pace, with consumption reaching an estimated 5 billion packets per year. But as more people turn to this quick snack, the industry faces some critical challenges. Rising costs have put brands on edge.
In the last 1 year, the commodity prices have gone up, right? So for us, it's oil and wheat, which contributes the most amount, and then followed by the labor costs. All of it has increased. So that has put a strain on the margins.
And that's Varun Oberoi, Vice President of Nissin in India. Nissin is a Japanese company credited with inventing instant noodles after the World War II in 1958. They entered India 3 decades ago.
This price increase has lasted longer than what everyone expected. So now in the last month, and you'll see more in the coming months, there'll be a slight price increase, which should not put a big dent in the consumer's pockets. But it will still cushion some of the of the increase for the brands.
Varun shared that price hikes are coming, but there's another issue at play here of shrinkflation, where some brands are reducing the size of products to maintain price points. Here's what a consumer, Asta Agarwal, has observed.
I don't know what's happening with these noodle companies these days. When one is cooking noodles, the cake size seems to have shrunk so much. And there are days when I cook one pack of noodles and then I don't feel full and I feel like, okay, let's make another one. But the same price, the same single pack seems to be so much smaller.
Let's go back to Varun Oberoi from Nissan, India.
It has happened in the lower price points. They are still very critical to the instant noodles category. So on those price points, we've seen a shrinkflation. On the higher price points, which is typically 20 rupees and above, we've seen price increases.
But with the pressure to keep noodles affordable, there's another concern. Instant noodles have long been criticized for their unhealthy reputation of being high in sodium, fat and preservatives.
We are not trying to unnecessarily defend it, that it's a healthy item. We do not encourage it to be had as a meal, but it's a healthy fun snack. And fortunately, consumers are aware enough to eat responsibly. And meanwhile, we keep offering them the other versions also, you know, with atta, with millets. But it is also a lot about how much affordable that can be.
So atta again is wheat flour. When you look at the instant noodle market for India, what's the latest trend that you see here?
International flavors. So we'll have a Italian flavor, we'll have a Japanese flavor, a seafood flavor, we have a Korean flavor.
That was Varun Oberoi from Nissan, India. So as the world's most populous country chooses more international flavors of instant noodles, this market here will depend on how well brands can balance cost, quality and health.
Not sure how I feel about Italian-flavoured pot noodles, but spicy unhealthy otherwise does sound right up my street, unfortunately. Davina Gupta with that report there. There's plenty more of that on the Business Daily podcast. If you want to hear a bit more of Davina's report, just search for Biz Daily. Wherever you get your podcast from, should say, just to Rachel Winter's point about what's been going on in the stock markets today and riskier seen stocks. Tesla's shares down more than 9% at the moment. Apple's down more than 5%. So it's something Rahul and the team will talk about in the late edition of World Business Report 2230 GMT. Do join him and the team then.